Welcome to the Sum of It All Take Two podcast. I'm Audrey Mendeville, along with my colleague Mark Alcorn from the San Diego County Office of Education. And this season, we're revisiting an entire past season in each episode, sharing what we think now, along with new resources, connections, and opportunities. Transcripts to our podcast are always available for you in the episode notes on your favorite platform. This week, we're revisiting season 4, Short Reads, where we read a series of articles that we felt were must reads for math leaders. Some of these reads were so impactful that they actually led to their own seasons. So I'm really looking forward to revisiting this season in particular today.
Yeah, me too, Audrey. And you know what I was thinking? Maybe it'd be helpful for our listeners if we shared a little bit about where we find these short reads. You know, for this season, we ended up with a bunch of articles. Like, might be great to share with our listeners where our go-to resources are, right?
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, so I subscribe to a rather eclectic set of newsletters that just show up automatically in my inbox and some professional organizations. And then I always scroll Twitter. But I don't actually have time to read them in those moments. So I need an accountability measure to actually go back and read them. And so I think we've talked about this before in a previous episode where, like, this podcast is one of the accountability measures for me in order to keep reading. Like, if we didn't have this podcast, I don't know that I would read a chapter of a book every week. I wouldn't make the time, I don't think. And so similarly, my accountability measure for short reads is that we put out a newsletter every other month for our math leaders in San Diego County. And we put in a curated list of important articles. And so every other month I put a couple hours on my calendar where I sit down and I go through all of those bookmarks and I go through all of the things I was like, oh, go back and read this or check this out. Is this a good new read? And that keeps me embedded in continuing to look for and find things that are valuable to read and to share with others.
Yeah, that great point, Audrey. And I really always look forward to seeing what are those things that you put together, those articles that you put together for the newsletter, because that gives me a whole nother resource of things for me to find some time to start reading. So great job on that.
Thanks.
So the other thing that, as I'm thinking about this, Audrey, the other resource that I've used over the years is NCTM, a National Council of Teachers of Mathematics. And they traditionally have had three journals. They've had an elementary journal, a middle school journal, and high school journal. And these journals have been really for educators at all levels in terms of teachers, classroom teachers, people that supporting classroom teachers. But now what they've done over the last couple of years, they've really rolled this all into one particular journal called the Mathematics Teacher, which is PK-12. And it's part of the membership of NCTM. So when you become a member, you get access to this particular journal. But you can also access their articles for a small fee. So, you know, if you're somebody out there that might be interested in using multiple articles over the course of the year, the membership might be worth it because you get access to the archived articles as well. As I, you know, look at the things that I've used over the years in terms of articles, I have to say, Audrey, I think most of them have come from NCTM. We use a lot of other resources, of course, but really that's been my primary go-to. So for those of you out there that are thinking that it might be worthwhile, you might even check with your district or school to see if they might be able to help in sponsoring you to get a subscription for that. So that's just an idea to explore.
Yeah, that's a great idea, Mark. I appreciate that. But okay, you've mentioned that you use a lot of these articles. I think it might be worthwhile to spend just a couple minutes sharing, like, how do you use these short reads in professional learning, or like, how do you share them? What do you do with them?
Yeah, that's a great point, Audrey. You know, I find the articles that are helpful in bringing another voice into the room besides my own. I think it's important when we're leading professional learning that it isn't just something that is attached to one of us as a personality. And it's something that we can show that there's a larger group of people out there that are engaging in whatever instructional strategy or whatever improvement we're looking to use in our classrooms. Many of the articles cite specific research that backs up the type of things that we're looking to do in classrooms to help students around mathematics. And many of the articles actually have very helpful examples and connections to the classroom. And the other bonus is that they're usually only about 5 or 6 pages long, which really makes them a good length when we want to bring them into professional learning. And they can be really helpful to spark discussions. And Audrey, and I know over the years, you and I have crafted maybe a question or two that's a guiding question that we might have participants use as they read the articles. So I think that's very helpful. One thing that does come to mind, though, Audrey, is I'm thinking back to being in sessions and using articles. And I have to say there is one practice that I do not use that kind of drives me nuts. And so I'm going to just bring it out here in case there's other people that might have the same thought. Is it has to do with when the leader of the professional learning asks us to jigsaw a particular article, meaning this group reads this section. Oh, you all over there, you're going to read this section and you're going to read this section. So nobody gets to read the whole article. We all read these little chunks of it. And then we report out. Maybe we make a poster. Audrey, that stuff drives me nuts. I just have to tell you.
Well noted. I think jigsawing works only with really specific kinds of articles that are divided up in that way. I'm with you. Like most of the time I'm like, I need to know what came before and where this is going after in order to have a conversation. So I understand, Mark. Well, I know that there's like multiple ways that we learn in professional learning too. And I appreciate you kind of pointing out that like conversations is one of those ways around an article, producing something, having a task, reading, like having multiple ways that people engage in learning is so important. And so I appreciate that, you know, you're talking about ways that we can build a collection of things that can be discussed as a way that our participants build learning. So thanks for that. So as we look back at this particular season, it's super interesting to think back about how we can look at these articles kind of collectively instead of revisiting them one by one. And one of the themes that comes out to me as we look at these articles that we read in season four is about this idea of building on deficits versus building on assets. Mm. And so, for instance, one of our reads in episode two was an article by Rachel Lampert, and she talks about how when we focus on deficits rather than strengths, it's a counterproductive strategy. And yet like that's the myth that we're held to. We're held to this myth that like when we can identify what the deficit is, we take that deficit and we start building towards remediation on it instead of starting on building from someone's strengths. And it's super interesting to think about that in the context of students with disabilities, how that shifts from a medical model to maybe neurodiversity, framing the differences as something that's just a difference rather than a deficit. Right. But this has been coming up over and over for me again and again as I'm sitting here in the context of rethinking or reconsidering what math intervention should look and sound like. And I think what happens right now in so many of our schools and classrooms really feels illogical and counterproductive. Like those words are just like kind of like coming off the page at me. And so I wonder what it would look like if we were to rethink math intervention in a way that centers assets and builds on students' strengths instead of doing the opposite. So I'm super curious about how we might repurpose some of these articles to think about some of the newer ideas that we're having conversations around.
Yeah, Audrey, I think that's really thoughtful to consider this whole idea of math intervention. And I think the thing that, as I've considered that as well, the thing that seems to not be able to be separated from that is that how we're looking at assessment, because the idea of the need for intervention is all based on us finding something out about a student that is necessitating this so-called intervention. And I thought, Audrey, it might be helpful to bring in another article from NCTM just real quick here. And the article was written over the last year, and it's called Our Children Are Not Numbers. Mm-hmm. Real powerful article in the NCTM Mathematics Teacher Journal. And actually, our colleague, Jody Garvino, mm-hmm. from the Orange County Department of Education, is one of the authors of that article. So shout out to Jody. And in that article, the authors examine how our assessment practices further this deficit mindset. You know, what was cool is in the article, they remind us that the Latin of assess actually means to sit beside. Isn't that so interesting? Mm-hmm. And all I can think of is, Audrey, like I'm thinking of a kid sitting on a computer doing some sort of a digital form of an assessment with me as the teacher nowhere in sight, like sitting beside. That root word of assess, to sit beside, boy, it seems like we've come a long way from that in this spirit of trying to be efficient, perhaps. And in this article, Audrey, the authors mentioned, what would it look like to engage in a more humanizing assessment practices practices that support the positive development of students' identity, agency, and belonging. So I think that just this idea of students are positioned with assets, I think it's really interesting to think about. So can you imagine, like, if the type of assessment we're doing, like, as you said a few minutes ago, positions students in terms of their assets? Think of, like, the cumulative effect of me as a teacher engaging with my students and constantly being reminded of their assets. I just think that would have a complete change in my mindset of how I look at my students, because I would be constantly faced with their assets versus traditionally in mathematics, where we're constantly faced with so-called deficits in our students. So I just thought bringing in that article might be a way for people to access some of this thinking around assessment.
Mark, I really appreciate you bringing that article into this conversation. You know, for our listeners, we'll link it into our show notes on our podcast so that you can find it easily as well. I think this is at the heart of what we're talking about with humanizing is, and the whole reason of having a take two season is for us to go back and rethink some of the things, right? And so rethinking assessment seems to be a really powerful move towards rethinking then intervention and what it means to be behind and what it means to have holes and gaps. And so I think it's really thoughtful of the way that, you know, Jody and her colleagues are putting together this idea of positioning it with assets instead. What do they already know? How do I look at it from what they already know? And what do I then consider are the next steps for them in terms of their learning journey is so powerful.
And Audrey, if you don't mind, I'd like to actually bring in one other article that we did not read in the short reads that has been published since. And you mentioned Dr. Rachel Lambert earlier. She actually published an article in the NCTM journal as well. And it's called UDL Math, The Magic in the Margins. The Magic is in the Margins, Universal Design for Learning Math. And in there, she offers one other suggestion that I think is really interesting to think about. She talks about math not being a passive process, and also mentions this idea of empathy interviews in terms of a way of connecting with kids and getting to understand not only what they know about math, but how they're thinking about math. And Audrey, I just think this Rachel's idea of this conducting empathy interviews, it's just such a wonderful way to start with assets in terms of what we've been talking about, right?
Absolutely. You know, I think empathy interviews are a key lever for change. I really do. I don't think they're as shiny or as publicized as test scores and dashboards, right, but I think they are just truly packed with really important data that when we examine it can be used to deeply understand something. And I think when we do that, we can then more easily see some clear options for change or next steps or improvement. So I really, I appreciate that idea of empathy interviews so much. And I know we've talked about them in several other episodes. I really believe in them as a space for us to consider how we collect data and how we think about change.
Yeah, for sure, Audrey. And, you know, there's one other theme that I'm starting to notice in our conversation and in these articles, and it's just around this general theme of humanization of mathematics. And, so let me just share a couple of places where I've heard it today and where I noticed it in the articles that we included in this season of short reads. First of all, in the TOTOS article, I know in the TOTOS article, it talks about the use of students' first language as a human right. Mm-hmm. Also in the TOTOS article, mathematics is a human activity. And in Jody's article that we're just talking about, there's this point around assessment in dehumanization. And how it's been used how it's resulted in this dehumanization traditionally. And then of course, Paulo Tan and his co-authors their title of their very book is Humanizing Disability. And so it might be interesting to think about how this whole notion of humanizing is something that is attempting to push back on a system for the way that many years mathematics is taught and is still taught in many cases. in a way that did not recognize the humanity of our students. It's been especially dehumanizing for particular groups of our students, this traditional way of teaching learning mathematics that has really treated them as part of an assembly line of learning, in which as educators, our job is to put a chunk of learning for our students and have them mimic it back to us. And when you think of that cold view of an assembly line, there's just nothing humanizing about that. There's nothing about me bringing my culture into the room or me showing up with my assets. And so I just think this whole theme of humanization is just so important for us to consider.
That's a really interesting point, Mark. I appreciate you bringing that up. You know, it's making me think about, interestingly enough, how my empathy kind of gets in the way sometimes of that happening. And, you know, when I look back at episode 6, when we read the article that is co-authored by NCSM and TOTOS, the discussion around multilingual learners is a really interesting article. And I'm thinking about how you're talking about this humanization. I'm thinking about the times when I went to another country and I was learning another language. And I remember the feeling of fear and uncomfortableness when someone would ask me a question and I wouldn't know what they were asking me or how to answer. Like either I didn't understand the question or I didn't have the words to answer it, right? And then also like the speed at which conversation was taking place and how difficult it was to keep up. And I think as a result, my empathy triggers go off when I am working with someone who is learning the language that I'm speaking. And so I often slow down and, you know, try to make the questions easy enough to answer. But like, what I'm realizing as we're talking about humanization of this is like, at no part when I was learning a language in another country, did they treat me as any less capable? Like nobody intentionally said, oh, I'm looking at you, and so I'm going to assume you can't go at the speed I'm going at. They waited for me to ask for it to be slower, or they waited for me to ask for them to repeat. And in no way did they change the kind of question they were asking me. Like we used all kinds of other tools to scaffold so that I could respond or I could understand the question. But like, I was still expected to answer like the difficult question, right? And so like, as I'm thinking about this, like, I don't know that we're always trying to dehumanize. Like, I don't think that's always like the intent or the thing that's happening on purpose, but that sometimes our own empathy gets in the way and we have like these triggers that go off that automatically move into scaffolding when scaffolding is not needed, or we make it easier because we're trying to avoid, those feelings of uncomfortableness. When in reality, like if we thought about it, like the humanizing thing to do would be to allow the learner to be in control and have autonomy to say, can you say that again? I didn't quite understand that. Can you ask it a different way? Right. Like, so I'm struggling with this still. This is all very new thinking. So I apologize to our listeners if it's not coming out super clearly, but I am thinking about what that means in the context of thinking how we humanize both mathematics and learning opportunities for our students.
Audrey, I actually think that's a really good point. And I think that our students pick up on those things. I think they pick up on when they feel like the expectations are changing because we think we need to do that scaffolding. So I think that's a really good point.
So we have one other thing we might want to discuss, which is curiosity, because there's a lot of curiosity embedded in all of these conversations in season 4.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point, because this idea of rehumanizing mathematics for our students, I actually think there's some strong connections to curiosity around that.
Yeah, but since our next episode is going to look back at curious schools, I think we should save some of that chat for next week and invite our listeners back in to hear what we're thinking now about curiosity in light of these articles and that season 5.
I think that's an excellent idea. Otherwise, this will be a very long episode. Well, folks, thanks for joining us for this episode. In our next episode, as we just said, we will chat about season 5, Curious Schools. Until then, send us a tweet with the hashtag SumMathChat. That's hashtag SumMathChat with your questions and thoughts. We'll keep the conversation going there. Until then, best wishes on your professional learning journey.